Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Main Menu Live this week. And this week, we present to you 2 hours live with GW Micro, talking all about Window Eyes version 7.0 and its most notable newest feature, scripting. We're going to get right into that right after we hear from Jamie Pauls from AccessWatch.
Hi, this is Jamie Pauls. Using the Google search facilities on AccessWatch, it is possible to narrow reviews to those related to Window Eyes. Use the search edit box on the homepage of AccessWatch and check the checkbox to search the AccessWatch site instead of the web. You will find several reviews related to Window Eyes. With the upcoming release of Window Eyes version 7.0, it would be a great time for Window Eyes users to submit reviews of software that has increased accessibility with Window Eyes. Visit us at accesswatch.info to set up a free account. If you prefer, you can read reviews on our blog at accesswatch.wordpress.com. Until next time, have a great week.
Thank you, Jamie. We appreciate that. And let's warmly welcome our co-host here, Daryl Shiandro. Hello, Daryl. How's it going?
Good evening. Everything is going great. We got back in the nick of time, but we're here for all of you.
So. That's great. I thank you for that.
No worries. I would not miss this show for anything.
Oh, so I know. I was very nervous. Anyway.
Oh.
But at least you weren't caught in an ice storm.
Exactly.
And that's right. That's right. And, well, tonight we have Doug Joffrey and Aaron Smith from GW Micro. Good evening, Doug.
Good evening, Jeff. Hi, Daryl.
And good evening, Aaron.
Howdy, guys.
Howdy. Well, tonight we're here to talk all about Window Eyes version 7. And, wow, there's been lots of excitement generated due to the newest feature that you've been talking a lot about, that being scripting. But I thought before we got into all of that, we'd give you an opportunity to talk about the features that are coming up besides scripting, because I know that there's a number of features there that are not related to scripting necessarily. You want to go ahead and take that, Doug?
Sure, I'd love to take it. Yes, there's a lot of new things with 7.0. Scripting obviously is the largest, and we're going to spend the most of the 2 hours tonight talking about scripting, demonstrating it, and taking questions, obviously, on all of it, because it is brand new to everybody, so it's a very exciting topic for most people. But, as I mentioned, we do have a few other things we added to 7.0, and there's going to be more than even what I talk about now, but I'd like to at least kind of hit some of the big-ticket items besides scripting. We'll hold that a little later. And then maybe take some feedback or some questions on some of these non-scripting features that will be added, and then we can go on and just dig right into the scripting and spend the rest of the time on that. So one of the newest things that we've added to 7.0 is it's now fully Unicode. And again, a lot of people say, huh? What's that? But basically, Unicode allows us to work with any language, any document that's in any language, at least left to right languages right now. We've not done too much with the right to left languages. But a lot of the Asian languages, things like that, you'd have a document. It was difficult or problematic to try to get that to be read, or even some PDF documents that might mostly be English. But a lot of times they'll put some Unicode characters in there. So that now works flawlessly. We've got a lot of people that are bilingual, obviously multilingual, that want to be able to use other languages and switch flawlessly between them. And now they can do that. As long as they've got a synthesizer that speaks that language, Window Eyes is going to keep up with that. So we are fully Unicode. And that includes Braille as well. Braille is going to be fully Unicode as well. If you've got some Braille Unicode characters, they can be displayed correctly and things like that. So that's just a nice thing that we're finally glad that we've got nailed down within Window Eyes. Some other things that we've done is in our browse mode, which is our virtual mode of being able to access web pages and things like that, we've added several functions, and I'll just kind of rip through some of those right now. We've got, in no particular order here, we've got two new hotkeys, prior and next for graphic. So if you just want to jump to the next graphic in your web page or whatever you happen to be looking at, you can hit G and you'll go there. Shift G goes to the previous graphic. And of course, once you're on a graphic, you can just bring up the context menu and pick Save As if you want to, and you can actually save that image off to disk if that's what you want to do. We've added, we've always had the ability of being able to jump between controls on a web page. Just hit the X and it would just take you to the next control that's on the web page. Well, now we've actually enhanced that because we've had people that said, I want to go to the next button or I want to go to the next checkbox or whatever. So not only did we do that, we also have given you the ability of being able to jump to the third unchecked checkbox if that's what you want, or the fifth button, whatever. You can actually type in a number from 1 to 9 and then you can specifically tell it that you want to go to a button or an edit box or combo box or checkbox, radio button, list box, anything like that. So it just gives you total control to be able to quickly go to a form element, especially for pages that you use a lot, you just want to get somewhere quick, this is a good way to be able to do that. So, for example, let's say I want to go to the third unchecked checkbox, I could just do N, because that's going to be our hotkey, we think, anyway, I'm not sure yet, but N is for the specified next control, then 3, because I want to go to the third one, U, because I want unchecked, and then I can hit X for checkbox. So that basically would take me to the third unchecked checkbox from where I'm at. So it's a really quick way of getting around there. Then we also decided to take these controls that you can jump to now with our new hotkeys quickly. We also decided to put those in our page navigation. Insert tab pops up our dialog, and already we've got several radio buttons that you can either show all the links or tables or forms or all this business. There's like 8 or 10 of them up there. And we've added another one for Alt-C for control, and that will then display all the control elements with their field names. So it'll say first name edit box or phone number blah or whatever. It will just put all of those controls. You can, again, quickly jump to that. If you want to jump to the first name edit box, you can just pop it up, bring up the controls, type first, hit enter, and you're on the first name edit box, for example. Then we've also added place markers in browse mode. So we've seen some of the other products have place markers. The problem we've seen with those is that if the page at all changes in any way, they're not putting you where you really want it to be. And most pages today aren't static. They're all dynamic and getting more and more dynamic as the time goes on. And so we decided to be a little bit more creative in our place markers. So we've given you a hotkey that will pop up a dialog. You can go in and you can say whether or not you want a domain or URL specific. You can give your place marker a name. And you can assign it a specific number, 1 through 0, meaning 1 through 10, to allow you to jump to that particular place marker with another hotkey, whether or not it's temporary or not, meaning you want to store it for good or you're just doing it for the session. And then the most powerful thing is, we give you a radio button that when you're defining this place marker, you have the ability of saying, just go to this line only. I don't care. Just take me to this line. That's kind of what the other guys do right now. But then we also have, take me to this line only if the text matches. So we can let you know if we go to that line and it doesn't match what was there before, we'll give you, just say that it's not available. Or the most powerful of this is to go to the line, look for the text that was there, and if it matches, say, put you there and you're all set. Or we can then start searching from that point on. So we can actually start looking up and down from that line and find the closest line to the original line that has the content that you originally saved it at. So that, again, makes it much more, I think, usable with today's dynamic web pages and things like that. So that's a powerful feature.
Okay, right away.
Definitely.
Sorry.
Then we've got additional hotkeys to go with that. Jump to a place marker, so I can type in 5 in our hotkey, and boom, I'm going off to the fifth place marker that I've defined. Or they come up in our page navigation dialog along, with the controls I was talking about. You can also say, show me all the place markers and jump to whatever one you want. And then we also have hotkeys to jump to the previous and next place marker. So just go sequentially through your place markers as you do it. Now, I say sequentially, but of course, they could be jumping up and down all over your web page. It's wherever you set them. But you can then go up and down between all of those place markers. So that's pretty much in the browse mode arena. Then we've also added some Braille functionality to WindowEyes for 7.0. So we've got what we call now a line mode. In the past, WindowEyes was what a lot of people refer to as a structured mode. It was always just showing you the control that had focus, and it would just give you the relevant information to that control and not anything else. But people also wanted kind of a physical layout of how the screen is laid out within their application. So we've given you what we're now calling at least now we're calling it a line mode, which will be a physical layout all the way across your application window. So you can go up and down, or as you're getting focus changes and things like that, you can see things to the left and right. So if you go down to a row of five buttons, you could see the one that has focus, but you could click on any of the other ones that you happen to see on that line. And so that makes it kind of nice, especially if you just want to get a layout of the screen or you just want to be able to get to controls quickly. That will help a lot. Then we also have a speech box mode, so people, again, Braille users are hearing something through speech and they go, what was that? Well, now you can actually review back and as far back pretty much as you want to be able to go back within the speech text that's been spoken and be able to review that with your Braille display. And, of course, we've got some speed improvements within Braille, so we've tried to increase the responsiveness if you've got a Braille display tagging along with you. Then outside of Braille, we've beefed up our read-to-end feature. This is the ability of being able to just take a document that has a cursor that takes the down arrow key to scroll it down. We've modified that now. You could already go fast-forward and rewind. So you start this read-to-end, you sit back, you're listening. You could hit the left and right arrow keys. Oh, boy.
Go ahead, Doug. I'm working on it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait.
Wait, you hear me?
In just a moment.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, oh. I'll get Aaron back. Sorry about that. I'm not sure what happened. We'll
do that. Aaron got dropped. I heard the blip, and I thought I got dropped.
Yeah, no.
Oh, nope.
Yeah, you're okay.
Sorry about that,
Aaron.
Doug.
Keep going, Doug.
All right, good.
You're on a roll.
All right, I'm on a roll here. Let's see. Now I lost my train of thought. Okay, read to end. So while you're doing read to end, you can fast forward and rewind with the left and right arrow keys. You could already do that. Now we've given the ability to, as you're reading, increase or decrease the rate of speech. So you can just real quickly slow the speech down, speed it up, or whatever as you're doing read to end. And, of course, I was looking through all the changes since 6.1 was released, and there are many, many bug fixes in there that, of course, I'm not going to list now. And a lot of speed improvements, stability improvements. Of course, we still have our error checking, so we've been getting error reports from people where certain things going on, this going on, whatever. That has helped us tremendously to be able to make WindowEyes continue to be the most stable screen reader out there. And again, once 7.0 comes out, we'll list all of the items that we have improved for functionality-wise, all of the bugs that we fixed and things like that will all be listed in agonizing detail throughout that README file. So that will list every little thing out there. So those are some of the highlights of the non-scripting functionality that's going to be in 7.0.
Okay, very cool. Right, I think we're still working. I think we're still working on getting Aaron here. Sorry about that. I was chatting with trying to let Aaron know what's going on here. Okay, good. Yeah. So now there's of course been a lot of focus now placed on all of those features, but the most exciting thing that I think and that I've been having a load of fun with
scripting
is scripting. And so why don't we dive into that? We're not going to open up the phone lines quite yet, but the number tonight is 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. And Daryl, do you want to give them the other ways that they can reach us?
Certainly. You can send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org, or you can add that to your MSN Windows Live Messenger contact list, mainmenu@acbradio.org, and I'm watching those, and I will take your questions through those means. You can also keep track of what we're doing interactively at twitter.com/mainmenu. That's twitter.com/mainmenu.
Okay, good. And did you get Aaron yet?
Still working on that. I keep getting his voicemail now, so we'll get there.
All right, that's fine. We'll let Doug go and get started here. And
sorry about that, folks. I'm not sure why.
That's okay. He may be having internet difficulties over there, so.
Well, yeah, we were both originally going to be at our office to do this because we've got all the equipment, everything set up, but then we're having this giant ice storm, so I ended up staying home, working from here, and I thought Aaron was too, but he left his microphone at the office, so he's there. So hopefully he's not buried under a ton of ice. But.
Oh, boy. Okay. Okay, great. Well, we'll let you go ahead and take it and start into scripting here, Doug. And I think the first thing that we'll want to really talk about is the uniqueness that WindowEyes brings to scripting.
Right. I think I'd like to step back a little bit and kind of discuss what scripting is. I'm not sure the audience of where everybody is with this. I'm sure they've heard this term with some of our competing products out there use scripting a lot and things like that. And so I'd like to back up a little bit, kind of discuss what scripting is, how that molds into WindowEyes, and what kind of impact that will have with the existing functionality WindowEyes has, as well as where this is going to explode us in the future. So a lot of times people ask, what is scripting? And I went to Wikipedia and looked it up, and it says, a scripting language, script language, or extension language is a programming language that controls the software application. Scripts are often treated as distinct from programs, which execute independently from any other application. At the same time, they are distinct from the core code of the application, which is usually written in a different language, and by being accessible to the end user, they enable the behavior of the application to be adapted to the user's needs. So basically, it's just kind of an external force that allows you to mold your application to do more specifically what you want, because no software does exactly what you want all the time. And this gives you that external source, being able to control what WindowEyes does for you in certain applications or certain environments. So the next question is, why scripting? Why should WindowEyes, after we came out, what, in 95, so we're, what, 13 years old here with WindowEyes, why now with scripting? And didn't I personally and others at GW Micro say that WindowEyes didn't need scripting? I hear that a lot. And my comment is, I've never said that WindowEyes didn't need scripting. It's just that we felt that we believe that there are other ways of being able to get to the end result, and we've done a lot of that with our set file configurations. You can still do many things with our existing configuration, which will remain. None of that is being taken away from the user at all. But there are still certain times, and I've even admitted that there are still, you know, certain applications that are just so poorly written, so badly written, that they just are not accessible using modern techniques to be able to configure them. So that's where scripting can actually come into play. And so we can show you some examples of how that actually will be able to make applications that previously were inaccessible accessible. And scripting is also becoming the industry standard for application customization. Many of the applications you look at today use scripting to be able to interface into those applications. It's just kind of the norm. So, for example, Word and Excel, PowerPoint, Skype, iTunes, etc., all of those have the ability of being able to be scripted, which is just a very powerful tool that these applications have used for some time. And again, I mentioned WindowEyes will not lose any of its existing functionality, so fear not on that. Then, you know, the next question is, what will I gain out of scripting? And I would say you're going to gain extreme flexibility. It gives you everything that you really want to be able to do to an application but never could in the past, even beyond our comprehensive set file configurations that we have. You have full access to the Windows functionality and off-screen our WindowEyes functionality and off-screen models. So all of the data that WindowEyes maintains of what's currently being displayed on the screen, all the information about the windows and controls and what's focus, what's active, where the mouse is, where the cursor is, all of that stuff, and there's a tremendous amount of that data, is now fully accessible to you through scripting. So you can be able to search for things on the screen yourself or whatever, be able to do pretty much whatever you want. We also give you direct access to applications that expose an object model. So again, if you're using Word or Excel or PowerPoint, Skype, iTunes, or Internet Explorer for that matter, we give you the ability of being able to get directly into those applications' object models. And I think hopefully if we can get Aaron going here later, we were going to demo how you can actually talk to Internet Explorer directly and be able to talk directly to its object model to be able to do things. You could modify Internet Explorer or the web page right from underneath you if you choose to do that. So that's a very powerful access right there.
Kind of, and of course, I'm kind of especially interested in discussing that a bit further later on.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some interesting things that I have some questions about concerning the buffer too. So we'll get there
sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Great.
You're also going to gain access to Windows controls directly. So like edit boxes, list views, tree views, buttons, all of that business, checkbox, if it's a tri-state checkbox, whatever, you can get all of that information through scripting and be able to control those controls as well. So if you want to check a checkbox or you just want to check its state, you can do that as well. And we'll have some demos of that, of how you can actually modify that information using scripting. And of course, a powerful user interface, which is you can create simple user interface to the user or very complex user interface. When I say that, I mean within the WindowEyes scripting itself, we give you the power of being able to display a dialog with very rich controls within that. And what you do is you're actually specifying this information in an XML file, but I don't want to scare people out thinking, whoa, XML. It really is just basically a text file of a certain format, and we give you plenty of examples and walk you through how you can set this up. But the key thing is that you can set up a very good-looking type of dialogue with rich controls within that dialogue within the WindowEye scripting. In other words, you don't have to have a full programming language like a Visual Basic or C++ or something to actually put up a rich dialogue to be able to interact with the user. A lot of the scripting languages are out there. They give you built-in message boxes, things like that, which, you know, just don't cut it. So this, I can't stress this enough, that this is a huge feature that you will not see in the other scripting languages of screen readers that allow you to put up very rich user interface and be able to interact with the user very simple means.
Well, you want to have Doug?
Oh, go ahead.
You want to have Aaron talk a little bit about to give some examples of what we've done with that. I know one of the really neat things that he worked on was the add remove program script. Aaron?
Sure. I
go ahead.
I did. What we did, one of the things that's always annoyed me ever since, well, I guess, I don't remember if it was that way in 2000 or not, but in XP, you know, if you go into the add remove programs control panel, you get a list of all your programs, but if you want to get to WindowEye, you can't hit a W. You have to arrow all the way down to WindowEye, and that's very annoying. So what I did with the WindowEye system, get a list of all of the applications that were installed, and then I took that list and I built, using our XML dialogues that we have in scripting, I just built a very simple list box with a couple of buttons that listed all the applications that were installed, and I could, not only could I just type the letter to get to WindowEye, I could type out window and I would select WindowEye as being the first one. So our UI, like Doug said, is very powerful and it's very easy to use. And even if you don't know XML, the syntax is it makes sense. I mean, if you want to specify an edit box, that's the word you use, edit box. If you want to specify a button, you use the word button. So it's, even though it's a markup language, it's very simple and easy to understand. It really gives you a lot of power.
The other cool thing that we can do with the same XML file is, of course, that allows you to localize that. So we have a lot of our non-English speaking customers that want to be able to use all this functionality as well. All of the user interface can be stored off in this XML file, so it's very easy for them to localize it. Not only the dialogues themselves, but also the strings and the text that you might be using within your script can be stored in the same XML file, and we're going to actually give you the ability of being able to store localized versions of that. So WindowEye can automatically detect, or you can specifically tell it, what language to use so that it pulls out the correct strings, the correct dialogues, or whatever within that XML file. So localization works very nicely with this.
Oh, very nice, very nice. And we're using this UI with the Winamp scripts, and we'll talk maybe a little bit later about what we've done with those, and we'll also talk about what we're planning here on Main Menu, centered around the Winamp scripts that have been developed with WindowEye scripting.
Great, great. So let me just kind of continue on here. The next question that I'm asked, of course, is one of the top questions is what scripting language is used for WindowEye, because a lot of the other ones out there, they're either using proprietary ones or they lock in on a single script or something. So basically with WindowEye, anything that supports COM automation, and COM automation is a fancy term, but basically it's the industry standard for scripting into your application. Word, Excel, all these guys are using COM automation to be able to go directly into their object model. It is the standard. Any college, anybody coming out of college that's done any sort of programming language is going to know these. They're going to know a scripting language that is supported by WindowEye. So that's the nice thing. We've got already a huge base of potential script writers right there. So COM automation was designed for scripting languages. As I said, it's the industry standard. It's far more flexible than a proprietary scripting language, meaning it's just opened up to any language that supports it. So Visual Basic supports it, JScript supports it, C++, Perl, all these guys are out there. VBScript is what GW Micro is going to standardize on. So all of the scripts that we provide or anything that we do with scripting will be based in VBScript. That's just because we felt VBScript was probably the easiest to learn. It's still very powerful, and it's basically a subset. It is a subset of Visual Basic. So if people want to go on to the full Visual Basic, they can do that and still have the full power of Visual Basic, but still not lose anything from going from their VBScripts up to that. WindowEye embeds its own scripting host. So in order to use Visual Basic or JScript, those are automatically built into your operating system. So as long as WindowEye runs on your computer system, WindowEye 7.0, you've already got built-in, no questions asked, Visual Basic script and JScript. And the way that those actually are used today, if you wanted to write a VB script outside of WindowEyes or JScript right now, in order to run those, it actually runs another application that knows how to talk to the Visual Basic interpreter and the JScript interpreter, and that's usually the Windows scripting host. That's another application that's kind of the user interface to you to drive that. Well, we didn't want to have to go through the Windows scripting host. It's a little bit slower, clunky. It's another process out there that we'd have to deal with. So we actually host. We're basically Windows scripting host, just built into WindowEyes. So we automatically host that script. It makes it much faster because the script is running in our process. It allows a much tighter integration. We're able to dispatch error messages in a much more user-friendly and accessible fashion than if it weren't doing that or things like that. But not only do we host these scripts internally, we do still support external processes. For example, if you did write a Visual C++ application as a script to talk to WindowEyes, which you can do, we'll still launch that. We'll still use that. It's just going to be running out of process. The only side effect of that is maybe it's slightly slower, but it's still going to be totally usable. So we are supporting the in-process scripts as well as the out-of-process scripts. Again, total flexibility. The script language doesn't matter and can be mixed. So, you know, I might have a JScript running, talking to a VB script, talking to a C++ or whatever. Aaron's written some very good, we're going to have a GW Micro toolkit of some scripts that we're going to find, we'll start seeing a lot of script writers are going to be using because it just wraps kind of a wrapper around a lot of standardized functionality. And we're going to start seeing more and more people using that. That's all written in VB script. But these guys out there, they could be C++, whatever, still using Aaron's toolkit functionality that he's got. So again, total flexibility and just very cool. So now how does all this integrate into WindowEyes? Because WindowEyes is going to support global scripts, meaning these scripts are running all the time as long as WindowEyes is running. There's unlimited number of global scripts. So when WindowEyes launches, it will launch all the global scripts that you've told it to do. It can be any number of them. And those scripts will remain running until they've shut themselves down or until WindowEyes shuts down itself. Then we also can have application scripts, which will only run when the application they're associated to is launched. So as long as that application is running, that application script will be running as well. Those also are unlimited, and those will run as long as the application's running. The application shuts down, the scripts will shut down, or they can shut down themselves as well. So that way you can just make something totally global, like Aaron's that you were talking about in the add remove functionality. That was a global script. But you also are going to have some things that are application specific, like your Winamp scripts you're talking about, or we're going to give some demos of Skype and iTunes and Sonar and things like that. Those are going to be application scripts. Then a lot of people want to know, too, how do you create these scripts? Yeah, okay, fine, I can use whatever language I want, but how do I create this? And we say pick the editor of your choice. So you can choose whatever editor you feel most comfortable with. That can be Notepad, can be Notepad++, Word, SuperEDI, whatever you feel comfortable using as your editor of choice, you can use that. So again, we're not limiting you to using a specific compiler or using a specific editor. You get to pick that. And we've done some things to make it so that that editor can be integrated, so you get more of an integrated development environment, if you will, so that it allows you to still have that IDE feel, but yet you get the ability of being able to pick and choose what you want. One of the ways that you interact with these scripts once you have them or you want to do something with them, we have a script manager dialog. This is a new dialog in WindowEyes off of the file menu now, and I'm going to actually show you that. But basically, this allows you to set up the global and application scripts. So maybe somebody gives you a script or whatever, you can actually install them there if you choose to. We have another easier way to even do it than that. But you can associate the script being global or application. You can enable and disable individual scripts. So maybe you're having a problem with the script, you just go in there and say disable, enable, whatever. You can monitor all the scripts that are running. You can just go in there and look in a list view and it will show you all the scripts that are running. You can get help for an individual script there. So let's say the script writer has given you some specific help to his script. Well, you got this catch-22. How do I get the help if I don't know how to get the help? And so you can go into our script manager dialog, and if they've written it correctly, which is just basically a one-liner they can do, it will then register themselves saying, I have help. Our dialog will automatically pop up some sort of dialog that will give you all the help about that particular script. And again, some of these cool functionalities that Aaron's written in our global toolkit that we're going to offer is the ability of being able to display not only the help content, but also the hotkeys that your application uses, or maybe there's just one to pop it up, or maybe there's several after you've popped it up. All these things can be done in this toolkit dialog, which means you've got consistent user interface from one script to the next. Kind of what Windows is trying to do is give you consistency. Well, that's what we've done with this toolkit. And so we'll see, and again, I'll demonstrate some of this, where we've got some scripts that are starting to use this now, come up with this consistent interface, show you what the default hotkey is to pop it up, show you how to change all the other hotkeys within its script. You know, they have defaults, but you may want to change them, and you can certainly do that. You can reload a script. Let's say you've made a change to a script. You just want WindowEyes to just stop it and restart it again. It'll do that. You can set up script security settings. So one of the things when we start talking about scripting, all of a sudden we start hearing all this, oh, security, security. It's really not an issue. Security has always been a concern of GW Micro to make sure, along with stability, they go hand in hand there. And so we make sure that we address the security issues. And part of that is you can set an option that says only run scripts that have been signed. Now, if you're purchasing scripts, we're hoping that the author of these scripts has the capability of signing their scripts so that when you get them, you know that they've been signed by an authorized certificate, and you can just run them without fear that anything will be bad with them. But you can also self-sign a script. So let's say you get a friend from your neighbor, and you trust this person, but he doesn't have the necessary abilities of being able to sign a script, but you still want to run it, but you don't want to change your setting from not running signed scripts. Well, you can self-sign a script to your particular machine so that it will only run on your machine, but you've self-signed it, that part of Windows. You don't have to buy anything extra. You can just do it that way. So that'll work as well. So there's all sorts of settings that you can do to make sure that you're not going to be running a malicious script of some sort. God bless you. You can also set up your editor of choice within this dialog. So as I mentioned before, you get to pick your editor. Well, you can actually go into our dialog and say, this is the editor I want, here's where it is, so that when you pick an option that says edit script, it'll automatically launch your editor of choice, load the script into it, and you're ready to go. And we also have a hotkey that we've added to WindowEyes that allows you to just fast reload a script. So again, if you're editing a script and you just want to real quickly reload that script, you can set it up, hit the hotkey, and boom, it'll just automatically reload that script that you just modified. So WindowEyes, will WindowEyes scripts cause security concerns? No, as I mentioned before, we've come up with security ways of being able to deal with so that you don't have to worry about viruses or malicious scripts or access to secure data and things like that. We're going to make sure that scripts aren't able to run on secure desktops, places where you don't want people monitoring what your keystrokes are and recording them and things like that. So we're going to make sure that all of these scripts are secure and give you the ability of being able to open it up to as much as you want or be as secure as you choose to be. So where do you start with all this scripting? And the first thing you need to do, or what I would suggest you do, is learn the scripting language of your choice. Now, if you don't know any, I would recommend a Visual VB script, because that's what GW Micro is going to standardize on. You need to learn the WindowEyes object model. So we have documentation, which will be provided, of course, once WindowEyes ships. We'll have a document that just goes through and talks about all of the object model functionality within WindowEyes, and I'll talk a little bit about that as we go on through this. You need to understand some terminology. For instance, we're object-oriented. The COM automation is based on objects, basically, and so you need to understand what an object is. And an object basically is a container of data, and I'll give an example of that. And within an object, you can have a property, which are like attributes, and within objects, you can have methods, which are things you can make an object do. Or you can have events in an object, which are things that an object can cause to happen. And the way that you interact with these are what's kind of called the dot operator. And let me back up a little bit. And let's pretend, I used this example before, but let's pretend that your dog is an object. And within that object of your dog, you can have that dog can have attributes. So you could say dog.color. That's the dot operator. So dog is the object, dot color, color being the attribute, the property. You can then read what the color is. You can say, you know, speak dog.color, and it might say brown. Or you could say dog.color equals yellow, and you've just changed your dog's color to yellow. So some of these are either read-only, write-only, or read and write-only. And the documentation, of course, talks about all of that. So that's a property. Then you can have a method. So you could say dog, because that's my object, dot play dead. Play dead would be a method. So that just makes the dog play dead. Or I could say dog.rollover 3. So that means dog, my object, method rollover, 3 is a parameter that I'm sending in, so I've told them to roll over 3 times. Or you could have an event of your dog. So let's say your dog barks. That could generate an event, and that could generate an event called my dog barked, for instance. And then you can actually interact with that, and you can discipline the dog or whatever you want to be able to do at that point based on that event. So once you understand the dot operator, once you understand objects and properties and methods and events, all this stuff just comes in and just starts playing. But again, this is the industry standard. Nothing proprietary about any of this. If you want to talk to Words DOM, you got to know the same thing. You also need to understand Microsoft terminology in general, meaning what are Windows? How do you deal with Windows? How are they maintained within Windows operating system? What's an overlap window? What's a child-parent relationship? What are controls? What does it mean to be activated or focused? All of these types of things. And so then you need to pick your editor of choice. All of this stuff you need to do ahead of time. That's where you start. And we've given you some resources. If you go to www.gwmicro.com/scripting, we've given you some. This is a very basic web page at this moment in time. We purposely have not beefed it up yet until we actually release it. But we have given you some links to the Visual Basic, or rather VBScript object model, the user's manual for JScript. We've given you some there as well, just basic programming tips and documents and things like that. So there's a pretty fair list of links in there that you can go to get yourself up to speed with all of this stuff that I've just talked about. So if you want to be ready when 7.0 ships, that's where I would suggest to do that. And once you've got all of that stuff, then the next step, of course, is just dive in and do it.
Now, Doug, one of the things that we're going to be beginning around the 25th of this month here on Main Menu is a series of Main Menu presentations all about scripting. And we're going to basically walk the user from the very beginnings of, you know, what is a variable, what's a function, what's a subroutine, what are objects, properties, and methods, all the way through the necessary building blocks. And we're going to guide you through the process of how we built the Winamp scripts. And just like Jim Snowbarger did for JAWS for Windows, we're going to be doing the exact same thing, but we're going to be teaching industry standard languages. Specifically, we're going to focus on VBScript. And we're going to work on making sure that the information that we provide follows standards, such as following the GW toolkit guidelines and things like that, that GW Micro will be putting into place. So if you guys want to hold on for a few weeks, we're going to be beginning that series. But you might want to get all your documentation, get your editor of choice picked out, and we're going to take you through that process. And I think it's probably going to take, a number of weeks for sure to get you all the way through it. But by the end of that process, you'll understand exactly how we built the Winamp scripts and exactly what building blocks you will need to be able to further script applications using VBScript and WindowEyes. So stay tuned for that, everybody.
Yeah, that's just beautiful. And I love it that it's coming from a source outside of GW Micro to get that perspective on it. And you guys will be honest and you'll say how it is and work with it that way. And the beauty of it is what you're going to be teaching people is going to be something that they can use in other places. You're not just teaching them WindowEyes specific things necessarily. You're giving them tools that they can use in other applications like Word or things like that.
Exactly.
So it's very cool.
Yep. We're really excited about it. And we're going to have a website up sort of separate from ACB Radio's website, where we're actually going to provide resources for you and some outlines and that kind of thing. So it's going to be a pretty involved process. We'll have a lot more to say about it in the coming weeks. But we're real energized about it, and we're really looking forward to it. We want to get the Winamp scripts to a stable point so we can start getting all of our documentation in order. So we're almost there, though. That's the exciting part. So let's see. I want to go ahead and open up the phone lines now. The number is 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. And if you'd like to email us, I've noticed that we've had a number of people trying to call in already, but the line has been put on hold. But you're welcome to call in now, 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. You may hear Doug or Aaron speaking during the time that you're put on hold, and we'll pick up and get a hold of you and let you know when you're going to be on with Aaron and Doug. So just wanted to make sure people knew that the lines are open, and I'll pass it back to you, Doug.
All right, so I think what I'd like to do is go through now. I'll actually get WindowEyes running. My machine is a Vista machine. I've got WindowEyes running. And I'm just going to have to turn up the volume so you can hear it through my mic. Hopefully we can hear that. I'd like to start off first by showing the script manager dialog that I had talked about briefly before. kind of show you how it is now. I've got some global scripts running. Walk you through that dialogue. Then we'll just walk through some of the scripts. Aaron's going to take over and show you some real cool real-world applications. I'm just going to show you some cute little kind of scriptlets that we've written using the existing functionality of WindowEyes. So let me go ahead and pop up WindowEyes here. Let me get the volume up. Okay, hopefully that's you can hear that. Off of our file menu, we've actually created a new menu called Managed Sets and Scripts, which is off of our file menu. We've kind of taken some of the old set file information, like text to set, set to text, convert sets to current format, some of those things. We've moved into this pull-down, so the file menu isn't quite as cluttered. And within this, we've also added our script manager dialog. So I'm going to open up this pull-down.
Doug, I have to interrupt you and remind you to tell everyone that set files are not going away. Just
right.
Because we put them in a different menu doesn't mean all the functionality is going away.
That's a good point. We just reorganized things a little bit more. So basically we moved the set to text, those two guys, and the convert set to current format in here, moved the set file manager into this pull down, but the same functionality is there. We just put it in here. And so the first script manager is the first option off this menu. I'm going to hit enter.
Menu closed. Dialogue. Script manager. Scripts for running applications.
I'm going to silence that, but this brought up a dialog called Script Manager, and it started to read me the list view that I was sitting in that shows me all the active scripts that are running. Now, there's a radio button down here that allows me to show all the scripts by name, all the scripts by application, so I can either sort it by the script name or I can sort it by the application that they're running under. Or I can just show all of the global scripts that are currently running, or I can show all of the application scripts running for the application that was running when I popped up WindowEyes. Now, in my case, I was at Windows Explorer when I popped up the WindowEyes, so it's showing me applications for Windows Explorer if I choose to do that. Now, if I wanted to associate these to Winamp, I would go into Winamp, then go into Script Manager, and then I could show all the applications that are scripts that are running for the Winamp application. But now that I'm in my list view, it's currently set for all by name. Let me just arrow through this. Here's the first item.
Script address.vbs application global window title status running description.
So there are, whoops, sorry, there are five columns here: script, application, window title, status, and description. So the script just gives me the actual physical script name that WindowEyes was been told to run, and then the application is whether it's global or whether it's an application specific. So mine said global because it is. Now again, if I were on the Winamp ones, you would see application Winamp. And then it gives the window title for the application that I'm doing. Now, because mine's global, I have no window title. But otherwise, it would show me the title of the app. Because remember, I can have multiple instances of an application running. I could have three versions of Notepad running, and I might have then three versions of my script running for each Notepad that I'm running. And so it's important to know which script is actually running for which version of your application. And then the status of my script, whether it's running or it's stopped or it's disabled. I think I'm missing one, but it'll give you the status of whatever the current script is. Now, mine is running normally, so it just says running. And then there's a description column that you can do. That's up to the script author of whether or not they want to give you a description of what their script is. It's basically a one-liner they can do at the top of their script that our dialog manager will go off and find and automatically display that up there. So let me just go down to a couple of them. I'm going to skip real quick to a specific one down here called VoiceRotor.
Script VoiceRotor.vbs application global window title status running description. That's the ability to switch among installed synthesizers and Sappy engines.
This one is called VoiceRotor. This was actually written by one of our beta testers that I'm going to demonstrate a little bit later, and I'll give him credit at that point. But what he did here was he actually gave a description, and he called this adds the ability to switch among installed synthesizer and Sappy engines. We've been asked in the past to be able to have a hotkey that the user could just switch arbitrarily between whatever synthesizers they select. So they can go off and say DeckTalk and Sappy, Eloquence, you know, whatever read, and they can pick whatever they want and be able to do it. And so he created this particular script, put it up there, gave a description, and then I'm going to leave focus on this particular list item because I want to show you what else he did that our dialogue can expose because this was a well-written script. So I'm going to tab off of this, and here I'm on my four radio buttons, the display scripts by all name or whatever, so I'm going to just skip past those.
Scripting active. See. Checkbox. Check.
So here I have a checkbox that says scripting active. If I just want to turn off all of scripting, I want to just stop every script that's running, I can uncheck this checkbox and WindowEyes will shut all the scripts down and no longer launch scripts. So here's a good way if you've got a malicious script, you've got some problems, whatever, with the script, just shut it down. We can regroup and figure out what's going on.
More options. W. Checkbox.
So I just tabbed again. It went down to the show more options. So for a beginning user, they would typically have this unchecked. But when I check this, it gives me actually five more buttons. And I'm just going to kind of rip through what these buttons are. Now, there's an add button on here that allows me to add an add a script. So depending on what radio button I have checked, global or application, when I add it, it will associate it to that particular application. And so then I can also remove scripts, I can stop a script, I can get the script help, but I'm going to go quickly off to the script help. Hit enter here.
Close. C. Button. Dialog. Voice rotor help. Help information H. Voice rotor allows you to set up a list of frequently used sentences.
So this popped up the user interface, again using Aaron's toolkit. So it's something that's unique, or that's going to be consistent between scripts that choose to use this. Now they can write their own if they choose and be different, or they can use their supplied toolkit functionality to pop up this particular help dialog. And it also, what's cool in this is it gives you a button down here called Hotkey Manager that when you hit enter on this, it pops up another dialog. It shows all the hotkeys for this particular script and allows me to arrow through them. So rotor forward, rotor backward, rotor configuration, rotor help. These are four hotkeys that he has within this dialog. I can then select the one I want, tab off. It'll give me a description of what the hotkey does. It gives me what the current hotkey is and gives me a button to be able to change the hotkey. So that's the power of being able to display the user interface that you choose up here to be able to configure the script exactly the way that you want it to be. Now, the other options on our dialog are I can disable scripts, restart scripts, edit scripts. There's a security button, and there's an advanced button up there. So there's lots to this dialog, and I don't want to spend the next hour talking about all of it. But that's the main interface into scripting, and this is where you would actually be interacting with your scripts if you choose to create them, add them, whatever you want to be able to do at that point.
Excellent, Doug. We have a phone call. Let's bring the caller in. It's Tina. Hello, Tina. How can we help you tonight?
Hi, Tina.
Hi. I have a previous version of WindowEyes back from, I think it's probably 5 or 4 or something. And I'm wondering, is 7 out released yet? Or if I upgrade before 7 comes out, what kind of options are there?
Well, 7.0 is not out yet. My goal was I wanted to be in public beta by CSUN, which is, I guess I'm leaving next week for CSUN. But it's not going to happen. We're very, very close to it. But keeping in line with our typical policy at GW Micro, we don't release it until it's ready. So we still have some functionality that we want to add. It's not that we're having issues. It's just we've got some more cool things we want to put into it. So once that actually first comes out, it'll be in a public beta form, and my guess is that's going to be somewhere in April timeframe. That's still a guess, but I think that's realistic at this point. Then typically the public betas last anywhere from 1 to 2 months. It depends on the feedback we get, what kind of issues that are hitting and things like that, but we put it out in a public beta for good reason, to get the feedback, to be able to fix these issues before we go final. I'm sorry.
Now anybody can run that public beta, right? You don't have to own WindowEyes,
well,
is that right?
Or we haven't decided on that, yeah.
Oh,
we,
okay.
When we came out with 6.1, we created a version that would be a full version that anybody could install. Now, it timed out after a certain amount of time, days, but it would be fully functional until that day hit. And the reason we did that is because even existing WindowEyes users couldn't test Vista without a full install.
That's
why we gave it to them. So we haven't decided if we're going to do that with 7.0 or not. Worst case is you run the demo, but if you're an existing WindowEyes user, you'll certainly have full functionality. It will time out after a certain date, but you will have full functionality. So that we have not determined yet. We just started discussions on that one. But as far as upgrading possibilities and things like that, typically once the strongly suggest that an SMA be used to be able to get this upgrade. Now, in order to get an SMA, you have to be current. And the SMAs typically are $299 for 3 upgrades. And this particular upgrade, if you're current with WindowEyes 6.1 now, is going to cost $175. So we just officially came up with that date or that price. So it will be $175 to upgrade from 6.1 to 7.0. So it definitely behooves you to get an SMA if you don't already have one, because that basically brings the price to $100 per upgrade.
Is there anything, before we get back into more technical matters, Doug, is there anything, if somebody were to call your sales, is there anything you guys, what would you do for guys that are, you know, people, guys and gals that are back at, you know, something old like 4.0, 5.0, something like that? Because a lot of times, as you know, these
people get stuff from VR, and VR never purchases SMAs, and you know all that.
I understand. Yeah, I think in the industry we still have the least expensive upgrade paths. If you look in our webpage, we proudly we have a link. If you click on the WindowEyes link off the main page, there's a version history link off of that page. It will show you every upgrade from 1.0 that we've offered, when we offered it, how much we charged for that. And you'll be amazed at how little we've charged over the 13 years for all the upgrades, even if you came from 1.0 up to, I think you're now maybe at the price of a WindowEyes. If you, 13 years ago, if you bought it, you wanted to upgrade from 1.0 to 7.0, you would probably exceed the cost of the WindowEyes. But up until that point, it's just amazing what the price is. Mm-hmm. So basically, you would go to that history, look up the version you've got, add up the cost of the upgrades to get to 6.1 now, and buy the SMA now, and that's going to save you money. Or if you wait until 7.0 ships, then you've got to get the 7.0 upgrade with it. And, so it just depends on what you can do at this particular time. But we also have, in the industry, nobody does this, is we have what we used to call, I'm not sure what our current marketing is on this now, but we used to call it lease to own, which is the ability to being able to buy WindowEyes over time. So if you're not a WindowEyes user at the moment, then and you don't have $895 to plunk out in one check, then you can buy it over a period of months. And basically, and Aaron, I don't know if you know the prices off the top of your head, but it's somewhere in the range of $40 per month or $100 per month. We have a couple plans that you can just buy it over time, and that way it makes it much easier, and you can still run WindowEyes right away.
Yeah, we probably don't want to get mired down too much in sales-related questions. It would be good to stick with the technical stuff, but I'm sure anybody can call your sales guys, right? They can help them out.
Absolutely, and I don't even know the prices of anything. So, yes, let's stick techie.
Okay, let's see here. I was just handling another callback here. Okay. So let's see now. Do we want to get into, where do you want to head from here, Doug?
I can show some of my little simple scriptlets. I'd like to show like a Hello World script. Everybody's got to start with that, right? So this is just a very simple, I don't know, 4 or 5 line script that just shows how simple it is to register a hotkey and have that hotkey speak something. And then we'll start speeding it up and showing more advanced scripts, and then we'll have Aaron show some of the real-world applications out there with some of these scripts.
Okay, great. And again, the number is 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF, if you want to call in. Take it away, Doug.
Okay, everybody's telling me to increase my volume, so I'm going to do that on my speaker when it talks or speaks some more here. So let's start, first of all, with the Hello World little script. So I don't know if I went through that one or not when I was in the Script Manager dialog as one of the global scripts, but there was one called Hello World there. And the default hotkey for that was Control Shift Windows R. So I'm just arbitrarily picked that. So let's press that particular keystroke.
Hello World.
Okay, is that
Hello World?
Is that easier to hear out there? So I'm going...
Yes.
So that's a very simple script. What I'm going to do is go back into the Script Manager dialog, and I'm going to bring up that particular script and say edit it, and that's going to launch my editor and bring that script in. Now, I could just manually launch my editor and load it as well, but I just want to show you the functionality here. So I can go back into my Script Manager. I'm going to hit H to get to Hello World, and I'm going to hit Alt-I, which is the shortcut to edit that. That automatically launched, in my case I'm using Notepad++, but it launched that, loaded the script for me in that particular editor. And now let's just go down. So line one is actually blank. It reads the line numbers, so that's as I go down, you're going to hear the line numbers as I go down. But the second line is...
2, set, register key, keyboard, register hotkey, control shift, windows R. Speak hello world.
So this just said set, which is a VB script command, but register key, which is my variable, equals keyboard, which is an object that we provide to you, dot register hotkey, which is a method of keyboard, and then we give, in quotes, we give the particular hotkey that I want, and so here it says Control-Shift-Windows-R, and that doesn't have to be a string, but I chose to do that, comma, and then in quotes the function that I want it to call. So in one line, I've registered the hotkey and told it what function to call when that hotkey is pressed. And again, if this script were written correctly, I would give user interface to the user to define what that hotkey is, not hard-coded into my script. This is just a simple example. So if I down arrow again, I've got a blank line on 3. Down arrow again.
4. Suck. Beat the low world.
So here again, VBScript, just sub, it's the name of a subroutine, called speak hello world, and that's the name that I gave up in my register hotkey function. So that's the function that actually gets called. Now I can pass this parameters if I choose to or whatever, but in this case I chose not to pass anything. I just wanted to call this function. The next line down.
Hi, speak hello world.
So my one line after my sub definition is just speak, which is again a method that we provide to the user, and you can just speak a string. It's a simple form of it. So just speak, in quotes, hello world. That's how we heard the word, the words hello world. And then down again.
Six, end, sub.
So end sub. That's just in VBScript how you end the end of your subroutine. So that's that simple. I've registered the hotkey, calls the function, and does the function functionality of that function, which happened to just be speak hello world. Again, I apologize if you're not a VBScripter or if you're, this is a little bit going over your head, but it's just kind of meant to show how simple it is to just get a single hotkey to do something. And, of course, it can get much, much more involved in that where you need to interact more with the application. But this is the Hello World example where you just want to do something simple.
Now, Doug, if you have a script, say, for you have a Winamp. So you have a, would you have a file like winamp.vbs and you'd have a bunch of these subs in it? Is each script a subroutine, or how does that?
Right. No, that's a good question. We keep the scripts all separate for each script that you're doing. So for each global script I have a separate, in my case, .vbs.
Okay.
So in Winamp's case, you'd have one VBS probably out there with all of your functionality in that one VBS that's unique just to Winamp, and all the subs, all the function, everything will be in there. Now, that can be calling other scripts that are running, like their GW Toolkit that's a global script that's running. Now, it can call that and use some functionality out of it, or it can call many of the other industry standard objects that are out there that are already pre-installed on your system that you can do to manipulate files or manipulate the registry or do all these other things that you can do with other objects that are just built into your operating system,
right,
as well.
And
all
it,
that functionality is in there.
Yep, and it does both, actually. 3,000 lines of it.
and it's one script, one file per application, though, or one file per.
Right, it's typically one per script that you're doing. So if I'm writing a script for Winamp, I'm going to have one VBS. If I'm writing the
okay. So I'm seeing that as multiple scripts, and you're seeing.
Right,
that
I think it's a little different than what you're used to. Yeah. So yes, it's one file with all the scripts. So the nice thing is it keeps it compact over there. So if I've got a global script that's, for instance, the global script for add remove we were talking about before, that's a single VBS file over there. It doesn't get intermixed with all the other global scripts that you've got in this big honking long file, and you've got to find where that function is that just deals with this thing that's totally distinct from everything else in there. So that's the nice thing of being able to keep it all separate. And then also, if you've got your user interface, then you need this XML file with it. Again, it's just a text file with a .xml extension. But that can then, typically you would call that the same thing. So you might have winamp.vbs, winamp.xml, and then you might be able to store all your hotkeys you've got. You might have a winamp.ini to be able to store all the user-defined hotkeys and options and parameters and things that you might expose to the user, all in that. So you just basically, at most, typically would just have those three files, or maybe a help file that goes with it or something as well.
But I think it goes without saying, though, that you can also have as many scripts as you want per application. So if you wanted to modularize the code, you could have 20 scripts, although it'd be a little unwieldy to deal with from a management standpoint. But you could have Winamp 1 through Winamp 10.vbs, for example. And
how would those be associated then?
Well,
right, you would just go to there's a couple ways you're going to be able to do this. We've got a packager type of thing, so the script developers can actually take all these files that they want as part of their scripts. Now, the scripts also don't have to just be scripts. They could also be some set files with it. It might just be set files, might just be scripts, whatever. They can package all that together using interface that we provided to the script author. They can package this together into a specific WindowEyes file that they could then pass around, make available, sell, whatever they choose to do. Then the consumer of that can take that file and then import it in, or basically it's kind of like add remove programs off your operating system. It's basically like that. In fact, we called it add remove script or add remove. But so you can then bring that file in and it will automatically load the files where they need to be, do the registration that needs to be done, and you're off and going. So if you've got a professional script done, you would just receive that install file, and you would just install it, and boom, you're ready to go. And when you don't want it anymore, WindowEyes will allow you to uninstall that if you choose to do. Or you can just manually copy the files in and go to the script manager dialog, as I showed, and just pick the add option, select the script that you want, and boom. It's either going to associate globally if that's my radio button, or it's going to associate to the application if that's the radio button I chose.
Cool. Okay. Great.
Nice.
So, now let's get into something a little bit more interesting than Hello World, but we had to start with that one. A cool script that was written early on, I think Aaron started this, and then Mike Lawler at the office kind of continued on with it, is if you use WindowEyes now, when you're going through list views, we already read you rich information about the list view. We can read the column headers and the column information and all that business. But we thought it'd be cool to be able to, people have been asking us to build in WindowEyes, the ability to be able to read a specific column of the highlighted item that's in there. Well, we kind of even went further than that with scripting. Let me shut down my editor here that
yes,
I've got
Tom.
Running, and I'm gonna bring up Windows Explorer. That's a good list view.
Yes, Tom. Windows.
Okay, so I'm just in Windows Explorer now in the root of my hard drive here. And if I just arrow up and down with WindowEyes, of course it's going to read the columns. I'm in detailed view, by the way. But what we've done with this script, which is a global script, and basically it says, I'm a global script. Anytime a list view becomes the focused window, I'm interested. So it's basically dead in the water until a list view gets focused. And then all of a sudden it takes over and says, okay, the insert arrow keys allows me to virtually move around this list view. So Doug was the last item that was selected. And now I can just hold insert down, and it's going to go right down my column.
K.
That which is the name K.
Map.
Math ML examples.
MP3.
I'm just going right down my name column. Now, Doug is
with
still
with the arrow keys or what?
Right. Insert arrow.
Yeah.
So I just held down the insert key and hit the dedicated down arrow, and I'm going down. Now, if I do insert right, I'm going to go right a column.
Date modified 2/1/20 08:37 a.m.
Insert right again.
Time file folder.
And this is without having to use the mouse cursor or the Wii cursor.
Exactly. I'm just virtually... Now, the nice thing of that...
That's kind of handy.
I'm glad you brought that up, because what's limited... If you were to use the mouse pointer, what's your limitation? The screen.
Yeah.
You can't go beyond the screen. Well, I'm in this virtual mode. We know how to talk to list views. We don't care if it's visible or not. I can go down as all the way to the end of the list view, regardless of what's being shown on the screen, and go through the columns or whatever I want to be able to do. So the insert four arrow keys allow me to move like a spreadsheet through my list view that I'm sitting on. And then we also give you, so whatever one I'm on, I can do Alt 1 through 0 to get the 10 columns that a list view might have. So I can do Alt 1 right now. So name MP3. If I do Alt 2.
Date modified 2/1/20.
If I do Alt 3.
Time file folder.
And Alt 4.
Size empty column.
If I try Alt 5.
No column 5.
Says there's no column 5, so I can't do that. And so I can jump to the beginning of my row, end of my row, top of my column, bottom of my column. And then once I find one virtually, I can do a insert enter, and it will then select that item. It'll remove the selection that I did have and select my virtual. Or if I do Control Insert Enter, it will add it to my selection. So I can virtually find what I want, do Control Insert Enter, and it will add it to my selection.
That's amazing.
So yeah, that's just a very simple example of a script of what it can do. And we're going to provide that.
Can you do that inside a web page too? If it's inside a browser window?
Well, right now this is strictly list views. So only when you're in a list view will this actually work. This particular script. Now, you could write other scripts to do other controls and be able to navigate through those,
gotcha.
But this is designed for a list view.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a very, very cool little scriptlet that was
right,
added.
List view versus, yeah, right, okay, gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of. We called it, LVNav, list view navigation.
So.
And then Aaron also created another little cool thing. Again, we're just ripping these things out because it's so exciting to be able to create these little things, what you can do. And again, it's not that we couldn't have built them into WindowEyes, but it's just there's so much other stuff that we have to do with WindowEyes. Why not allow scripts to be able to do some of this other cool things? Some people may find this totally useless. Well, then don't run the script. Other people find it invaluable. Well, then run the script. But if we hard code it in WindowEyes, it's always there. It's difficult to maintain and get it exactly the way people want it. Another feature that he added regarding list views in general is we call this LV mod, which right now when I arrow up and down through a list view, I have to hear all the columns that are currently visible on the screen. So what he did was he created a hotkey, or rather a script, and he gave the hotkey control, I think, grave accent. You have to talk to him about that one. So control grave accent.
Yeah.
So this popped up a dialogue, again, created by WindowEyes script. Didn't require any special programming language to get a dialogue. And it's got a list box over here of all the headers. So in my case, I've got name, date modified. I'm just down arrowing.
Size, 4/4.
So there's four particular columns in here. Now he has buttons over here called move up, move down, remove, reset, set, and cancel. And again, I think he just threw this together. I'm not sure that we're done with this one yet. And we'll probably integrate this into LVNav is actually what we'll end up doing ultimately. But what this allows me to do is, okay, in this list view, I don't want to hear date modified. So I'm going to go ahead and do Alt-R to remove date modified. I don't want to hear the size either, so I'm going to Alt-R to remove that. And because I'm doing a very stupid example, I'm going to take type. I want to hear type before name. So I can actually move this. So I'm going to say move up on the type.
You.
So
one of two.
Type is one of two.
Name. Two of two.
Name is two of two. So now when I set this by hitting Alt S, and now when I arrow through this list view, I'm going to hear
type file folder name K. Type file folder name Mac. 4 of 257.
I've now defined of the columns I want and which columns I want and be able to read through it. So it's just really cool.
But if I want to save that setting, can I save that setting to something?
Absolutely. This was a proof of concept in here. This particular script doesn't do that yet, but it's kind of a proof of concept. Absolutely. What we'd end up doing is being able to store the list view that you're on, the application you're in, and say, when I'm here, these are what I want to be able to use for this one. So you can actually store that uniquely for each of those that you're there.
Wow.
So, yeah, so these are just kind of really simple examples of what you can do, and it just kind of blows people away that you can do that right away. Then let me show, remember I talked about that voice rotor, and this was done by Steve Clower, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. He's one of our private beta testers, and it's kind of exciting to start seeing these scripts being written outside of GW Micro, but I think somebody gave him the challenge of wanting to be able to switch synthesizers on the fly. WindowEyes will let you switch languages within Eloquence or ViaVoice, but he wanted to be able to pick the languages, the synthesizers that he has installed. So maybe I want DeckTalk and Eloquence Read, whatever. I can pick whatever I want and then hit a hotkey to just rotor between those very quickly to the languages or the whatever engine I want. So he, and I showed you some of the help that he gave you inside of the script manager dialog, and he allowed you to define the keystrokes that he wants, that he provides. So there are basically four hotkeys. You've got Control Windows F2, to bring up the dialog, which I'm going to do shortly, and then he gives you Windows F2 to go forward and Shift Windows F2 to go backwards, and then I think he had a help one that popped up the help dialog. I don't remember what that one was, but I could go to the script manager dialog and get it. So if I do Control Windows F2 right now, so I'm going to do Control Windows F2.
Dialog. Configure your voice rotor. Available voices. B.
Okay, so this brings up a dialog with two list boxes. One, the first list box populates all of the engines and synthesizers that are currently displayed in the Select Synthesizer dialog. All the SAPI engines that you have installed, all of that is in this list. And then he has another list box of the engines that you picked or all the synthesizers that you've selected. And I have already, and then some buttons that add, remove, clear, apply, and save, and all that business. So you can actually, these are actually stored off then, so that when you pop it back up, it remembers it. And in fact, I was playing with this just before we called, and I have,
read SAPI 4.
So I've tabbed off to the second list box called Voice Rotor, and the first one was Read SAPI 4, then
Mamie SAPI
4, which is some language, I'm not sure what that is.
Microsoft
So I picked these particular three SAPI engines, but I'm going to add one more. I'm going to go back and select the DeckTalk because I want to end with that one. So I went back to the previous list box and selected that. I'm going to hit Alt-A for Add, and that added it in there. So now I'm going to go ahead and Alt-S for Save.
So, Doug, the thing to remember here, and I know this is obvious to you, but for the listeners out there, Doug is, what he's doing is he's arrowing around in a list box, hitting a hotkey, and adding things to another list box that he's able to review, all through the scripting language and all through the custom UI capabilities of the WindowEyes scripting language. So
that's
it's
right.
Really
Steve,
rich.
Just create a little XML file to be able to populate the two list boxes and the buttons. And again, it's not. I don't want to scare you off with that XML business, but right, all of this is done within the scripting, VB scripting, and the interface that we provide with WindowEyes.
And you'll notice it sounds a lot like our Select Synthesizer dialog. I mean, that's how common the interfaces can be. You can actually, and when we started playing with the XML UI, I actually mimicked some of the WindowEyes dialogs, and it's pretty easy to do. So you get a real familiar interface when you use our XML interface.
Now, when you use the XML layout, what does it do visually?
Well, that's the nice thing, too, is that it actually allows a blind person the ability of being able to do what with some good confidence that it's going to actually look appealing to sighted users as well. But basically what you do is you set a group. You can define a group, and then you can define components within that group. So you can kind of think of your whole dialogue as one group, and then you can set up another group within that and say whether or not you want the controls to be left justified or centered or right justified within that group. And then you can have another group off to the side of it or below it or whatever, depending, you know, all of your groups, because your groups may be just a group of groups, and then within that you've got controls. And so all of that, you and our documentation will be better than describing it than I am, but it does allow you to be able to deform exactly where you want these controls, whether they should be side by side, top, you know, one underneath the other or whatever. And then the tab order is automatically determined by these groups, that how you would basically how you would just expect it to be if you were to look at that dialogue. We give you that default tab order functionality as well.
There's a lot of logic built into the internal rendering mechanism of our UI stuff, so that, like you said, Doug, someone who is not familiar with how things look visually can still have confidence that it will be presented nicely to someone who is looking at the screen.
Wow.
So I'm just going to close this dialogue real quickly, and I'm just going to go ahead and do his forward, which was Windows F2. So I'm going to hit Windows F2. Okay, there was that foreign language one. I didn't know what that was. F2 again.
Microsoft and English.
There's the Microsoft. F2 again. And
Windows Desktop Access 32 Windows.
And I'll stay there because that's what it was. But that allows me to just rotor between the engines that I selected without having to go to our select synthesizer dialog. Boom, there it is. So this has been really good, especially to multilingual or bilingual individuals, just to be able to switch real quickly to the language they want. So
I should add that it doesn't only let you switch between SAPI engines, but you can switch, if you have like a TripleTalk installed and you wanted to switch between that and Eloquence Read, you could do that too.
Right. Well, actually, the DeckTalk I went to was not SAPI. It's actually was just a standard one. But yes, you could go to hardware synthesizers, dedicated software synthesizers, SAPI engines, all that. Doesn't matter. If it's installed on your machine and Windows supports it, it'll be in that list.
Great. Doug, we have a call.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we have a caller, Doug. Let's bring our caller in. Hello, John. How's it going?
It's going good, Jeff.
We'll let you ask your question, and then we'll let you listen on the air, okay?
No problem at all.
All right.
Doug and Aaron, this is John Gunn. Guys, nice show, and Doug, I liked your presentation on Sunday also. One quick question. If I write a script, is there any, and I think I know the answer is probably not, but is there any form or way that WindowEyes can, let's say, debug the script or let you know where you screwed up, and I'll hang up. Thanks, guys.
We've never created an error, so I don't know. But
yeah, my scripts are never error-prone.
The nice thing, too, that we've done with the integrated scripting that we're able to do with VBScript or JScript or anything that you can actually install within the integrated scripting environment is the ability of being able to capture those error messages, and we actually display that in a accessible dialog that will pop up, and that dialog gives you lots of options. It's first of all, it'll give you the error. It will give you the line of the error. Again, if this is a VBScript or JScript or some language, interpreted language, it will give you the line of all of that. And then we give you some buttons that say, one, either stop the script because it's just going berserk, or edit the script so it will actually launch your editor of choice and load in your script so you can actually go edit that. And what else does it give you, Aaron? It gives you something. Oh, something.
It gives you ignore if you decide that the error that pops up is something that you're already aware of and you can take care of yourself. You can ignore it and your script will continue to run.
Oh, right. So just ignore the error and just go right on. And then there's a help dialog. So depending on the error message, you can actually click on help, and it will actually give you more help about what that particular error is or whatever to try to help you.
That's actually a cool thing. The help actually launches our documentation to the relevant section so that you can actually see, okay, here's my syntax. Oh, there's my error. I found it in the help. So it launches, takes you to right to that section of the documentation, which I think is very cool.
Yes, and you also have the ability of being able to trap these errors within your script as well. So we give you an event through WindowEyes that will allow you to, instead of WindowEyes defaulting to put up a dialog, it basically just fires an event in your script that says, hey, an error occurred, gives you the exact same information that our dialog has that you can choose to do something with. And so we've got an example of that. Hopefully, if we have time at the end, I'd like to show how that actually can be used within a script as well. But basically, it gives you total control of that. Now, if you're using an external application like a C++, well, then we can't tell that. In that case, your script, I mean, who knows what your C++ application is going to be doing, and so it's up to you to be able to deal with that. So we that's more why we recommend you can go to VBScript. But if you're a full-blown professional, you know C++, then you have your own editing error techniques to be able to find out where the errors are and resolve those errors. So hopefully that answered your question there, John.
Okay, Doug, we have another caller, actually. Sorry about that.
Okay.
They had just called in. So let's bring Mike in and talk about coming right in at the tail end of your stuff there. Okay, Mike, we'll let you ask your question, and then we'll let you listen on the air. Go right ahead, sir.
Doug and Aaron, Mike Capel, how you doing?
Hey, Mike, we're doing good.
Excellent. Simple question. This is probably one of the simplest questions you're going to get tonight, and then I'll hang it up. Is there going to be a public beta cycle?
Yes.
Okay, good. Good, Doug.
Absolutely, yes. With all of our major releases, we want to make sure that we get the problems out, it does what we say it does, and make sure that we don't have to put out another release a week later to fix all the bugs that we just introduced. So absolutely, there will be a public beta. The public beta is defined by the amount of problems and feedback that we get. So as I mentioned earlier, it could be anywhere from 1 month to 2 months out there, whatever. They're kidding me at the office for saying this, but I always say we don't have a board of directors out there that say you must release this product on this date because we need our bottom line to be such and such. We don't do that there. So we put it out when it's ready.
Oh, we have some questions from MSN.
Oh, great. Okay, Daryl, go right ahead.
Okay. David wants to know, he said, hey, I heard that there's going to maybe scripts available for Cakewalk Sonar. What's up with that? What version is going to be available? And do you think it'll be possible to script for some of these VST plugins that are used for various musical instrumentation software-wise?
Aaron, you want to take that one?
I would love to. Actually, one of the applications that we want to demonstrate here in a few minutes is Sonar 7 Producer Edition. We have the track view of Sonar working pretty nicely. So that's something that we certainly can do. Now, we're not musicians at GW Micro, most of us, and we don't really know how to use these applications. So we're going to be limited in terms of what we can do. And we have the knowledge of scripting to make them work, but we'll probably have to end up working with musicians who use these applications. And WindowEye scripting, I don't know that we've mentioned this yet, is really designed to let anybody do scripting. I mean, it takes knowing the language, learning Visual or VBScript or whatever language you want to use, but it really is designed so that you can sit down, you can pick it up pretty quick, and if you have an application that you want to get working, you can create scripts yourself. So while we'll do what we can to get as many of these applications working as possible, and that will continue on, you know, throughout the years, we'll continue to develop scripts when we can. Everybody will be able to develop for these music applications. But Sonar is one of the apps that we want to show here in a few minutes.
Excellent.
Okay, any more, Daryl, from MSN?
Actually, that's what I've got right now. Thank you.
Okay, good. Thanks, Daryl. All right, where are we heading next, guys?
Aaron, do you want to take over and show some more script functions?
I would be happy to. One of the things I want to start with is a script called Window Manager that back before we started doing WindowEye scripting, I used AutoHotkey, which a lot of people are probably familiar with, to write a little bit of a window manager because every time that notepad came up, I always wanted it to be maximized. I always wanted it to be in the same position, and I got tired of it not remembering. So I wrote a little script for AutoHotkey that did that. Every time I saw a window pop up with the notepad class, it would maximize it or it would put it where I wanted it or what have you. And when we started doing the WindowEye scripting, I thought, well, what a great thing to be able to do with WindowEye, because there are a lot of applications that that set files need windows to be maximized for. Access comes to mind. You always have to maximize the child window in order to get Jeff's sets to work correctly. So I thought, well, this would be a cool thing to do. It would allow me to create some UI. It would also allow me to play with windows and things like that and get used to the whole scripting thing. So I'm going to bring up the window manager dialog. Let me turn up my speakers here. A And I have no sound. Hold on just a second. Okay.
Windows 8.1R. DWR. Stop space.
All right, I have some
stop
other
space.
Scripts running. I think we're all set now.
Yeah.
So let me go into the script manager and make sure that I have that script ready.
Yep, Windows manager preloaded. E, script disabled.
All right, let's...
R.
Oops, hold on just a second.
R. Windows F. M.
This was working before I started, I guarantee it.
M. Script remove.
All right, so I'm going to add that window manager script. Hold on just a second here.
S. There is script window manager.vbs. Application. Global. Status. Running. List view. 404.
All right, so I have my window manager script running, so I'm going to get out of WindowEyes here.
Hey, Aaron.
And I have the hawk. Yes.
Can you slow down your speech just a little bit?
Oh, is it too fast? You know, even a side guy can
talk
that
fast? No.
Yeah, it is a little fast,
Aaron. Not for me. Not for me, but, you know, we do have listeners who...
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better. Thanks, Aaron.
All right, not a problem.
We're not all Speedy Gonzales.
All right, so I have Control-Shift-M as the hotkey to launch the window manager. So I'm going to go ahead and hit that hotkey now.
Dialog. Window manager. Available windows. W.
It's just going to give me a list of all the windows that are currently running at this moment. So I have a command prompt open in the background. I have a couple of Skype windows. I have iTunes and Sonar and all those things running in the background. So this available windows list box just lists all the windows I have open. Well, Notepad is the one I'm interested in, so I'm going to go ahead and run Notepad. Actually, I'm going to close Window Manager first. Now I'm going to run Notepad. And I'm going to bring up my Window Manager dialog.
Window manager.
So now I'm going to arrow down through this list until I find Notepad, or I can just hit an N. All right, let's find... I started with a U because the document title is untitled, so that tripped me up. So now I have... Untitled Notepad, followed by the class name, which is also Notepad. So basically this list box just gives me a list of all the windows that are open on my system. So now that I have a window selected, I can tab to a selection of actions.
Action, minimize, and radio button, checked, 1 of 5.
So I have 5 radio buttons. They're minimize, maximize, normal, close, or custom. And so I can choose, now that I have a window selected, Notepad, I can choose what I want, what action I want to take place whenever that window gets activated. Since I want Notepad maximized, I'm going to go arrow over to the maximize button.
Action, maximize.
And then if I would have chose custom, I could also, some other controls in this dialog get enabled, like width and height, X position, Y position. But that does bring up another facet of using the UI. You can really get complex. That doesn't mean complicated. That means complex, where you can disable controls that you don't want to be enabled at a particular time, or re-enable them when you select a particular radio button, or do all kinds of different dynamic things. And that's all, you know, based through our XML and through the script. You can have some really cool interaction in the dialog. But I'm going to go ahead and tab off of this radio button group.
Match M. Window title, key, radio button, checked, 1 of 3.
So I have a match group, which lets me match, if I want to look for the window title, I can look for the window class name, or I can look for both the window title and class name. Since I'm using Notepad, and as we heard what tripped me up earlier, the document name can be different depending on what file I have open. I'm more concerned about the class name because the class name is always going to be Notepad. So I'm going to go select class name, radio button.
Match, M. Class name.
And now all I have to do is I have another set of buttons that let me test the window that I have selected. So I want to make sure that it's in the right position or that it does get maximized or whatever. I can hit that test button. Or I can go ahead and add it. When I hit add, it's going to add that window along with all of those settings, you know, maximize, match class. It's going to add that to a list of monitored windows. And I've already added Notepad earlier on, so I'm just going to tab to that list.
Monitored windows. Class, Notepad, maximized.
So it told me class because that's what I'm watching. It told me Notepad because that's the class that I'm watching. It told me maximize because that's the action that's going to happen. So I'm going to go ahead and save this.
Save button, space.
I'm going to go ahead and close the dialog. And I'm going to launch Notepad again.
Desktop. Launch Notepad.
I have my voice set a little bit weird for Notepad, but although you can't tell, Notepad is maximized. Actually, you can tell if I bring up the system menu.
Space. Restore our...
And sorry that's moving a little fast, but if I arrow down to maximize...
Maximize X disabled.
It says maximize disabled, which means I know that that Notepad window got maximized.
Is this, so the is window this facility going to come with WindowEyes?
Oh, I don't see why not.
Yeah, wow.
So it really gives you the ability to get the windows where you want them. And I just recently added the ability for child windows to get maximized. So for applications like Access, you can specify that the child windows get maximized. And you can have this little utility running as a global script, so it's always available. It's always sitting in the background watching for windows. When it sees a window get created that either matches the title or matches the class, it does whatever action you told it to do, and then sits back and waits for more windows. So.
And you save those options?
Sure. Uh-huh. You save them. They're saved in an INI file, so when you're when you first start up WindowEyes, if you have that script loaded, that INI is automatically read in. It automatically looks for any of the windows that are running. Like, say Notepad was already running when I launched WindowEyes. When that script runs, it's going to see that WindowEyes is running. It's going to automatically maximize it as soon as WindowEyes runs.
Sweet.
So that's the window manager. I'm going to move on here. And
I'd just like to say that I know that the good thing about this is that we're not just talking about this from a programmer's point of view, but those of you who are not programmers can get to really see how the ability to do scripting in WindowEyes is going to impact you as a user as well.
That's a good point, because we've actually heard from some users and they're saying, you know, I'm not a script writer, I never will be, I'm not interested in 7.0. Well, we're showing you that, yes, you don't need to write scripts, but there's going to be a unbelievable amount of things that are just going to explode out there that you can pick and choose what you do want to be able to use. So scripting is important whether you're a scripter or not.
Doug, one of the things I think it's really important to understand is this concept of community in reference to scripting. And can you talk a little bit about that in reference to the approach that you took? You know, what does this really provide as far as allowing people to get out there and do scripting itself?
Well, first of all, we plan on having some sort of repository on our webpage so that individuals can upload. So they're creating these things and they want to make it available to other people, because, as you said, this is just a nice community out there of people that want to be able to help other people or share their work that they've done or be able to use other people's works. So we're going to make it some way that we can upload these particular things up there. And so let's say Jeff Bishop wants to upload his latest Winamp scripts. They can go up there. He'll have access to his previous ones. He can remove the older ones, put up the new ones, and put up some README or put up some documentation on it, and then people can come to this repository and say, oh, Jeff put up another version of Winamp, or oh, Jeff just released this, or whatever, and you can download it, install it, whatever you want to be able to do. So we're going to make this that anybody can go up and upload these things. Now, again, you have to use these upon caution. You don't want to just install something that you don't necessarily know, and I don't think we're going to be able to certify that all these are valid and whatever, so we're going to do our best to try to keep that going. But hopefully we'll get to know some people that are able to write some very good comprehensive scripts, be able to share those around to other people to be able to use.
I think the other thing to make note of here is that due to the approach that you took using COM automation, you now have access to millions of developers who are used to programming in COM automation every day as they're sitting at their desk doing programming. And so, you know, you're not restricted to a proprietary scripting language, one that you have to either take a class or spend, a great deal of time trying to learn the antics of a proprietary language.
Absolutely, can't stress that enough. And the documentation for all these object models is pretty consistent in how it does it. So once you have the concepts down, whether you're writing for, I think Messenger Plus has a scripting language interface into it or whatever, that you can do things. Once you know the concept, you can go right in there and play with it, or Super Eddy or whatever. You can just go off and write them.
So isn't it the case that, I mean, a programmer wouldn't even necessarily have to know how to use WindowEyes from a user perspective? They wouldn't have to know that the minus key gets you into the /mouse cursor, or they wouldn't have to know the read line command. As long as they understand the object model and how it works, an application developer could decide, hey, the way I'm going to make my application accessible is I'm going to write a WindowEyes script to fill in my accessibility issues.
Right, they could certainly do that. I mean, I would like them to see them actually make their application accessible from the ground up, and GW Micro still.
You know what's going to happen, though?
Oh, yeah,
somebody's going to do it.
I know.
Well, they're doing it now. They're doing it now with other screen readers. I mean,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's very good examples of that. So, yeah, you're right, Daryl. I mean, that just goes without saying that, you know, you provide the technology, you provide the tools, you know, developers are going to do it. And in fact, it may even be a way for Oracle and PeopleSoft to work with me. So,
and as an accessibility evangelist, I know some people hate this, but as an accessibility evangelist, I'm not really as much concerned how it's made accessible as long as it's accessible. If somebody needs it for their job, ultimately, if they have to spend another $700 on a screen reader, hey, it's accessible now.
Sorry.
Well. Yeah, well, yeah, you know, those of us that work for a living and use our screen readers, we definitely enjoy eating.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, there's so many priorities out there. I just want it to be accessible somehow.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll let you continue on here, Aaron. I'll pick up a call. We just got a call in here. Go ahead, guys.
Okay. I'm going to get rid of a notepad here so we can get rid of that silly voice. I'm going to go ahead and show an actual application. We've done a lot of work with these little scriptlets, and they're awfully fun to write, and they really make the work days go fast sometimes. But we actually are working with some real applications. So we mentioned Sonar, we mentioned iTunes, we mentioned Skype. I think we're going to run out of time before we can show everything. But I do have Sonar running up in the background. That is one that I wanted to show, so I'm just going to go ahead and Alt-Tab over to Sonar.
Sonar 7 Pro, user edition, test.cwp track.
If you're not familiar with Sonar is it's a very complicated music application. That's one way to look at it. There's a lot of stuff going on in Sonar. One of the things that I did was I loaded a MIDI track, which has like, I don't know, 35 different potential tracks. Each track is a different instrument, and there's all kinds of things that you can do in Sonar. Like I said, I'm not a Sonar user specifically. I know enough that I can kind of get around. So that's where this script kind of came from, was just going through the documentation, seeing what hotkeys did what, and trying to integrate some of that into a WindowEyes script. Because when you first load Sonar with WindowEyes, Sonar has their own accessibility stuff where they pass some strings through MSIA, and that's very good. In fact, I require that in order for you to get a lot of text, but there's not really a whole lot else that happens. There aren't a lot of focus events and things like that. So what we've done with the script is try to capture some of the hotkeys that Sonar already has. For example, if you press the letter I in Sonar, there's a track inspector, what's called a track inspector, that either shows up on the screen or disappears from the screen. And what I did was I did some little scripting voodoo and captured that I key, and now when I press the letter I,
track inspector hidden. I, track inspector visible.
So whether the track inspector is hidden, whether the track inspector is visible, I get that feedback now based on just looking at the screen, looking to see if certain elements existed. If they do, then I know the track inspector is there. If they don't, I know the track inspector is hidden, and then I can speak that status whenever that key is pressed. Another thing I can do is I can arrow up and down through the track list.
Now on GTR-8, Jazz GTR-7, Calypso 6.
And that reads through the information that Sonar itself is passing through MSAA. But in addition, what I did is when you hit the comma, that selects a track you're on.
Comma, track 6 selected.
And what's interesting about Sonar is you can have a track selected, but you can also have an active track. So if I arrow to a different track, I selected track 6, but I'm going to arrow up to, say, track 3. So now I have one track that's active and one track that's selected. So now I set up a hotkey, control Q, which goes off and it queries for the active track, queries for the selected track, and then announces them. So I'm going to go ahead and hit control Q.
Track 3 active. Track 6 selected.
So now track 3 is active. I know track 6 is selected. I set up another hotkey that would actually jump me to jump focus to the selected track. Remember, I had track 6 selected. I set up control G to do the jumping, so I'm going to go ahead and hit control G.
Dialog. Select track. Enter a track number to select.
Oh, this is different functionality I did. Actually, this uses a little bit of our UI to prompt you for the track number you want to jump to. So track 6 was selected. I'm on track 3, but say I want to jump to track 12, so I'll just type 12 and hit enter.
1, 2, ignore error.
And I get an error because some of the stuff has changed in WindowEyes since I first came up with this script. But
we're constantly changing WindowEyes every day. And yeah. It's tough to keep our scripts updated on this. But
let me go ahead and
You can say that again, Doug.
Health and control.
Yeah, Jeff knows that too well.
Well, luckily we're getting close enough now to the end that I think we're, things are stacked more safe.
Letter J, that's what jumps me to the selected track. So I'm on the track 3, that's my active track. Track 6 is my selected track. So if I hit the letter J...
Jumping to track 6. Calypso 6.
Jumping to track 6. Now track 6 is my active and my selected track. I can reread the time, the measure that I'm on by hitting the letter T.
101000.
If I'm playing and... Yes, if I'm playing, I got to remember what functionality exists or not. I can fast forward or jump back through the playing. I can increase the tempo or decrease the tempo while I'm playing. One of the things that we did with some hyperactive windows, I think, in some previous versions of the Sonar set files we have, is we looked for an area on the screen that told you which tab was selected. There's an all tab, a custom tab, a mix tab, and some other tabs like that. So instead of using hyperactive windows, I actually set up some cursoring keys that look for those attributes on the screen. So when I hit shift left and right arrow,
all, custom, mix, FX, IO.
So those same kinds of things that we did with hyperactive windows in the past, we can do with scripting now. It's not to say that that's any better than hyperactive windows, but it just gives you a little bit more flexibility and functionality. So there's a lot more stuff that you can do in Sonar, but this really gives you an idea of some of the things that we can start to do once we get more information about these applications and how people need to interact with them and things like that. Then we can sit down and look at them and try to figure out what we need to do from a scripting standpoint to get it to work. So that's Sonar. I'm going to go ahead and close Sonar and move on to something else. One of the other applications that has been highly talked about.
Aaron.
On our list, Skype is one of the popular VoIP applications. We're using it now, obviously. And so what we've done is Skype is an interesting application because they have their own comm interface. And what that means is that if an application has a comm interface, actually, let me back up a bit. An application doesn't have to have a comm interface in order for WindowEyes to interact with it, to read its windows, to get information from it, things like that. But if it does have a comm interface, that means that the developers have provided the guts of their application in a way that WindowEyes can easily access through its through scripting. And Skype has one of those things. It's called Skype for Comm, which means they have a lot of objects. They have a lot of methods and events and properties and things that you can go query Skype about and get that information directly back rather than having to try to read stuff off the screen. So we've done some of that stuff with Skype. Doug, can you send me a test message and see what we get?
Sure. Let's see. You want Bubba?
Yeah, send it to Bubba.
So Doug's typing.
Doug G of Ray Online. Doug G of Ray says this is a test for Aaron.
So you hear that information read just like it does in Messenger. We get that information directly from Skype, an event fired that said, hey, I just got a message. Here's the text. Now with WindowEyes scripting, I can sit and watch for those events.
Not available.
Even if it's in the background?
Sure, even if it's in the background. You just heard it say Basophobe not available. That's my other Skype name. That means I changed my status, but Skype isn't even up on my screen right now. So I got the status change in the background just by watching a Skype event through WindowEyes scripting. So I can sit and listen to all the things that Skype has to say and basically just announce whenever something interesting happens. So that means I can do things like when I get a call, I hear who's calling me. When I make a call, I hear who I'm calling. And when I hang up from a call, I hear how long the call took. I can query how many active chats. I have a hotkey set up that I can query active chats. Let me do that.
Two chat members in the chat. Doug Geoffrey, this is a test. Chat members are Bobbygrog, Doug Geoffrey.
So it tells me the members of the chat, tells me the title of the chat. If I had multiple chat windows open, it would tell me all of them. Another nice thing I did is that, say I don't remember what Doug just said. I know I just got a message from him, but I wasn't really paying attention, as I tend to do when Doug talks.
Hey, wait.
So I'm like, oh, what was the last thing Doug said? So I have a hotkey that repeats the last thing spoken. So if I go ahead and hit that key.
Doug key of race, as this is a test for Aaron.
So I can reread back what the last thing was that was spoken. So another nice thing that we've done with WindowEyes is that we've exposed a lot of MSAA, so I can sit and watch a lot of MSAA events. So if I want to tab back through the history of that chat.
Link, list box, 9:37:40 p.m. Doug G of Ray says this is a test for Aaron.
So before, I don't think this really speaks well with Windows 6.1, but with scripting I can go and I can get the information directly from Skype, directly from MSIA. And this is something that's nice because Skype has a kind of have a history of breaking things more often than not.
Yeah,
so
I was just going to ask
what's
about
nice
that.
About this. Sorry?
I was just going to ask about that. Like the list view, you know, the list box of contacts, for example, has
right.
You know, that tends to sometimes break because of the way that Skype changes the, you know, its design. And do you think that scripting should be able to resolve that then?
I do. It's kind of a touchy subject with me because I don't always think that scripts should I don't think that scripting should be the first line of defense to making an application accessible. I believe that the developers need to be held accountable for their accessibility. But like Daryl said, that's not always going to happen. So I think scripting does give you the ability when Skype they do seem to break the contact list and their menus every other version. So the nice thing about having a script is that you don't have to wait on WindowEyes to get the problem fixed and get some hack in there. When the new version of Skype is released, if something needs to be modified in the scripts, it's just a quick update to the scripts. Scripts are posted in our repository, and the turnaround is a matter of days rather than waiting a very long time for a new version of WindowEyes. So.
Excellent, excellent.
So that is Skype.
We have a caller, by the way. Jamie Pauls is calling in. He's the gentleman who runs Access Watch, and he had a question. Jamie, we'll let you ask your question, and then we'll let you listen on the air. Go ahead, sir.
You bet. First of all, let me just say I like to use the Eloquent Speed Synthesizer quite a bit, and with 6.1 on my system, it has a tendency to crash pretty predictably, and I don't know if I'm curious if my system is just an oddity or if that's something you guys have been able to reproduce and probably possibly fix in version
7.0.
So, thanks a lot.
We actually kind of stuck with the version of Eloquence that we're using, which is version 5, for a long reason because we have learned that it's been extremely stable and bug-free where some of the other versions had some issues and things. I know there are certain words that you can send to Eloquence. I won't say them, but there are a couple words that you can actually send to the synthesizer to cause it to crash. They're very obscure words, I think even misspelled type of words or something. That's the only thing that I've heard as far as instability, unless you have some other things installed, like Kurzweil 1000, I believe, now gives you the latest, what is it, Eloquence 6.1 or something like that that it installs. And unfortunately, Eloquence wasn't very good about coexisting with newer versions or different versions. So in that case, I have heard of some instability issues. So if you have installed Kurzweil and you got their voices, then I suggest either setting WindowEyes to use theirs or removing theirs and setting them to use our version. But that's really the only thing that I heard. Well, I shouldn't say that. But there are also some issues if you've got a ViaVoice installed. ViaVoice is actually a version of Eloquence, just the front end was put together by IBM versus Eloquent at the time. Now it's Nuance. And sometimes some of those versions had difficulties. So my guess would be you've either got some bad version of ViaVoice installed that's causing a collision, or maybe you've got a different version of Eloquence installed that might be...
Doug, do you right away?
Doug,
we
do
are
you,
also
you
looking
wanna...
at a new version of Eloquence at some point and determining if it's worth putting that in WindowEyes or not.
Okay. Doug, do you want to talk about the script that one of the beta testers wrote that deals with these bad words for Eloquence?
That's true. Somebody, and I don't remember who it is, actually wrote
a script.
I think
it was Steve.
It might have been Steve as well. I think one of the first things that he wanted to do was be able to stop his synthesizer from blowing up because of these misspelled words. So within WindowEyes, we actually give you an event that will show you all the text right before it's ready to go to the synthesizer. We send it to your script if you choose to receive it. And you can, at that point, you can either modify the text and send on the modified, or you can just totally block it, whatever you want to be able to do, or just send it on unmodified. And so what he did was every string that came through, before it went to the synthesizer, he parsed it or looked at it to see if it had some of these bad words. There's only two, I think. And if he found it, he would just remove it from that string and then allow the modified string to go on through. So it would never, ever, could ever possibly blow up your Eloquence engine. So again, just another cool little technique that you can do.
Excellent. We have another caller. Let's bring John on. John, we'll let you ask your question, and then we'll let you listen on the air. Go right ahead, sir.
Hi there. Yes, I was wondering, does the editor that you use for scripts have to accept Unicode? Because I think I had a problem where I could edit the script with the editor I normally like to use, and it came out garbage. But then when I put it in Notepad, it didn't come out garbage. So I was wondering whether it has to be used to support Unicode.
Okay, John, thank you for that question. Go ahead, Doug.
The script does not have to be Unicode, but obviously now WindowEyes is 100% Unicode, and COM Automation is 100% Unicode. So if you do give us a non-Unicode file, what we do basically is internally convert it to Unicode, send that on to the parser, and then it actually parses it that way. So I guess the answer is no, it doesn't have to be Unicode, but we internally convert it to Unicode before we actually go and use it.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we have about 10 or 12 minutes left here, and I was especially interested in getting to the web.
Me as well.
The web example, and I didn't know if that was
because I'm seeing a number of websites actually that seem like they are accessible, but they aren't. And I think Jeff would be best to address exactly what we're talking about here. But on the accessible devices presentation on Sunday, I was under the impression that maybe we'll be able to do something about that.
Well, there's a couple aspects of this. I'm going to let Aaron show an example of one end of this. The one end is that we'll give you access through scripting into our browse mode buffer. So you can actually look at the entire browse mode buffer. You can actually even make some changes within that buffer if you choose to do that. That's one aspect of it. And then what I'm going to let Aaron show here is the ability within WindowEyes. Remember I told you that you could actually get a pointer, basically an object pointing into the object model of the application, whether it be Word, Excel, PowerPoint, whatever, and as long as they have an accessible interface into their object model. And we also give you that with Internet Explorer. So with Internet Explorer, we can go get the accessible pointer. In this case, it's HTML window 2 pointer. If you're an HTML programmer or IE programmer, you'll know what that means. But there's documentation that talks about it. And again, it's just basically an object pointer that you can then use that and be able to interact directly into the DOM. And so I'll let Aaron take over from here.
I have just begun playing with this myself, so the kinds of things that I can show you to do are pretty limited, but I can show you some of the cool things you can do. The first thing I'm going to do is get my browser going, so I'm going to go ahead and launch Internet Explorer. I'm just going to use the run dialog and launch it right to our web page. So.
If you want, you can just go into Google and do a search for IHTML window 2, and you'll get a good link there that will give you the entire object model that you can deal with once you have that pointer, and it's amazing what you can do. So,
yep, I did that right before I left work today.
You left work? Why?
It's okay. Actually, I have Internet Explorer open now. It's on our webpage. One of the we didn't really get a chance to talk about these, but we have some little scriptlets that provide you basically kind of some development tools with WindowEyes. We have an event manager that Doug wrote that monitors all kinds of events, whether they're MSA events or window events or what have you, so you can see the kinds of things that your application is doing. Another thing we have is called Immede, which is short for Immediate Window, which is actually a copy of the way that Microsoft Word's Visual Basic Editor, they have an immediate window where you can go in and you can type some stuff and execute it without having to write a script. You're just basically executing stuff in real time, and we've kind of came up with that design as well. So I'm actually going to use that immediate window script that we have. I'm going to pop it up on top of my Internet Explorer window.
This immediate window is perfect for just testing something out. You want to see what this object does. What does this do? You can just print it out, which will print it out visually in your edit box. It'll also speak it when it comes out. It's a great way to just play with the interface that WindowEyes offers. So I see this tool being extremely invaluable to web script writers.
Doug, now, while he's doing this, and we'll let you type there in just a second, Aaron, right now, a lot of times on especially dynamic websites, you have to, and you may have answered that I was taking a call. Sorry about that, but on dynamic websites, you had to refresh, the buffer, the browse mode buffer, sometimes to be able to get at content. Is this going to be a way where we will be able to dynamically do that, or is that still going to be a requirement?
Well, you could potentially do some tricks with this business. I should say that after 7.0 comes out, one of our biggest things that we want to deal with is all this dynamic web content. So we want to look at Web 2.0. We want to look at ARIA post 7.0, and we'll really explode the functionality after.
I just want access to my NewsGator clippings again. They're using these weird same page links now, and they look like I should be able to press enter on them, and they should do something, but they don't because of the way the link is coded.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'd have to take a look at those, but I think Aaron can kind of demo what some of the real basic things that you can do, but it's very powerful what you can do with this.
Yeah, when you get an IHTML window 2 back, you can do
number of things. I mean, the documentation for an iHTML Window 2 object is huge. So, like I said, I'm just beginning to scratch the surface myself of what I can actually do. But I have the immediate window that I talked about earlier up on top of my Internet Explorer window, and I have my mouse pointer, even though Internet Explorer is in the background, I have my mouse pointer sitting on the Internet Explorer title bar. What this immediate mode window allows me to do is reference the window underneath the mouse. And as Doug mentioned, WindowEyes has the ability to get a native object model from any window that supports it. So whether that's an Office document or, in this case, an Internet Explorer document. So what I'm going to do in this immediate mode window is I'm going to get the URL from the page that I'm on. And since I'm working with the mouse, I'm going to start by referencing the mouse object just by typing mouse.
And hope you have
E. And I'm going to use the dot operator.
Period.
And I'm going to reference a property of mouse, which is window.
W-I-N-D-O-W.
That's going to give me back a window object.
And I should say that he's just using the mouse as an example. He doesn't have to use the mouse.
Right.
As an example.
Right, exactly. It's just a fun way to do it. So that's going to give me back a window object. I can get what's called a native object model from that window object as a property. So I'm going to type another dot.
Period.
I'm going to type native object model.
N-A-T-I-V-E-O-V-J-E-C-T-O-D-E-L. Period.
Another period. That's going to give me the native object model for the window underneath the mouse, which in this case is an iHTML2 window. And once I have that object, I can continue to reference it by getting the document object. So I'm going to type document.
D-O-C-U-M-E-N-T.
And then a final property that I'm going to do of that document is the URL. So I'm going to type dot URL.
Period. URL.
And then I'm going to print all that out.
Error
and I get an error.
Error.
Hold on just a second.
This worked a minute ago.
Typos, well, I'm sure it's just a typo.
Yeah, let me look back through here. All right, let's try this another way. Let me retype things.
Hi. Window on http://www.gwmicro.com/windoeyes.
So that showed me the WindowEyes page. I actually moved the mouse down to one of the links on the page so I could work with the actual document. I think that's where I was getting confused. So I'm actually working with the actual document now. So my mouse is on top of the WindowEyes link, so I just printed out the accessible value of that link. If I move the mouse over to the BrailleSense link,
BrailleSense,
and then I reprint the value of what's underneath the mouse,
http://www.gwmicro.com/BrailleSense.
So it told me the URL. So I mean, like I said, this is the very basic things you can do, and you don't have to use the mouse. You can actually get the document and do all kinds of things with the document. So as to whether you can make a site that has some dynamic elements, whether you can get information about that or not, who knows? It's possible. I haven't got that deep into it, but you really do have a lot of options here. I can put the mouse on a graphic, and again, the mouse is just an example, but I can put the mouse on a graphic.
Is this going to be associated with Internet Explorer, or is this going, could this be associated with a particular site?
When you get a native object model, you're getting it for an application. So if you're in a Word document, your object model would be for Word. If you're in IE, it would be for that page you're on. In IE7, you can have different tabs. So whatever you're working with, the document object is based on the active tabs. So.
But you could then query the active the object pointer that you get. You could then query it for what the active web page is to verify it's the page you want, and then go do whatever you want to do at that point.
Okay.
And you could so we have total control over that. We can parse this entire tree. We can do whatever we want with that web content, within reason anyway. So it's extremely powerful.
I think I can. Yes. The problem I was having before is I wasn't actually setting that URL to anything. So once I have native object model back to getting the document object back to getting the URL property, I actually needed to set that to something. So I set it. I'm going to set it to Google. And you don't hear anything, but if I alt-tab back over to my IE window now.
Google Windows Internet Explorer.
So I was able to change that URL just by changing the URL property of the document object. So there really are some advanced things you can do once you get an iHTML window 2.
Yeah, you have basically full access to the source code of the page, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you basically can traverse the entire DOM node, the DOM tree, so you can get all the links and all the images and the controls and the text and anything that anything basically once you have an iHTML window 2, you can do anything with it that you could do with JavaScript on the page itself. So it's it really gives you some powerful functionality.
Excellent. That's great. All right, and then Doug, you wanted to show an error example. Do you know what kind of?
Oh, I was. Yeah. Aaron can do that too. But basically, with the immediate window that he was using, I think we heard some of those. I'm going to pop up that same immediate window that he was at. So I'm going to do our hotkey, which happens to be Control Shift Q.
Dialogue. Immediate mode window.
So, again, this allows me to type a single line of basically VB script at a time that I can be able to do, and there's all sorts of cool things. I wish we had a little bit more time. I like to, for instance, bring up the run dialog, and I can show you all the windows in there, and I can show you how we can change the tab order in the run dialog or change the text or check a checkbox that happens to be invisible there. We can enable that checkbox and check it or uncheck it, change the contents of the combo box, all this from the immediate window, just a line at a time. And obviously you'd have a script running that would just do that. Boom, real quick, but this is a great way to just kind of try something and test something out. But if I'm in this immediate window and I just try to do something that isn't right, like let me say print active window, I can't type here either. Let's try an ACTIVE window dot, and I'm just going to say blah, which doesn't exist, and I hit enter. So it tells me error, object doesn't support this property or method, active window dot blah, just doesn't exist. And so instead of popping up an error dialog that we normally would do if the script were truly running and you didn't do any trapping on the error messages, we would pop up a dialog that would tell you the error message, it would give you the line number that the script was in, the name of the script that it had. Well, in my case, I'm in immediate mode window, I'm typing these line at a time. I don't want to know that the script name is immediate. Immediate mode.vbs, which is what I'm running, because that's irrelevant, and it's also relevant to the line number that the error occurred on. It's just because I typed it wrong. And so we trap that error message within this immediate mode script. We're trapping the error message, and we're just displaying it out like we would any other message out there, printing it and speaking it and putting it out there right along with you. So it just makes that immediate mode, again, just like what Aaron was saying, if you go to Word and you go to its macro editor that it has there and you're typing in immediate mode, you get that immediate feedback. You can type, I can up arrow back to that line that I had the mistake on, I can hit end or whatever, I'm in an edit box, and make the corrections that I want to do and hit enter again, no matter where I'm at on that line, and it will then execute that line and do what I really meant it to do, minus my typo, that type of thing. So it's just one example of how you can trap this error message to your advantage and be able to make it more useful.
Excellent stuff. Well, we're just about out of time, and Doug, I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of remind people. We've got about a minute here, so about when we might see public beta for version 7 and ways of getting a hold of GW Micro.
Absolutely. Of course, I always hate these times, but so all of this is subject to change. Again, we aren't held by date. We put it out when it's ready. But we do feel very good about it coming along. We just have a few more things that we want to add to the scripting language before we put it out. But what we've got in there now is pretty darn solid. I'm going to be at CSUN next week showing all this off. I've got a presentation that I'll be showing. It'll be in our booth. People can actually come and play with it and see it's really real. You can do it. You can run the keyboard. But I was hoping to get this in public beta by CSUN. It's just not going to make it. I'm not going to push it out there and have something that I want a good first impression for people here, because it is good. And so my guess is it's going to be sometime in April time before we come out with a public beta. That will be available to anybody that they can use. Public betas last 1 to 2 months or whatever, and then we're going to go out with that gold at that point, once we feel that we've got a rock-solid product like all the other releases. And again, I don't want to put out a 7.1 3 or 6 weeks later just to fix the problems that we just introduced. So we're going to do it right. And again, the upgrade price on that is going to be $175. So if you're a 6.1 user, it's $175. If you're not 6.1, you'd have to pay whatever it takes to get to 6.1, then the $175. But I strongly encourage you to get that SMA. It definitely saves you money in the long run. Basically gets you over one upgrade free usually. So it's definitely a good way to go. You can go on we'll definitely be announcing this. If you're on our GW-info email list, we'll definitely be telling you, or GW News email list. We'll be putting out some information of when the public beta is available. I'm sure it'll hit the main lists as well, so that you can actually get this, download it, play with it, beat it up. Let us know what you think, what kind of problems you got or whatever. We'll fix those problems, and then we're going to go gold with this guy.
That's great. Okay. And you want to give us your website and phone number?
Oh, Yes, sorry about that. Yes, our webpage is just www.gwmicro.com, and we'll definitely have something splashed on our main screen right there that will make it obvious of where you can get that. And then our main phone number is just area code 260-489-3671. So you can certainly call us if you have any issues or problems or things like that. But hopefully we're going to see some people out at CSUN and be able to give some real live examples.
All right, great. Well, thank you, Doug, and thank you, Aaron. And
thank you.
Yeah, we've had a great time. We'll be back next week. We're just about out of time, and we'll be back next week with a brand new edition. Again, thank you, Daryl, for all your help tonight. I do greatly appreciate that. We'll be